for Jazz and Justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads, your station here on WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, 89.3 FM on your dial. WPFW is heard around the world and is growing. We've been getting emails, letters, phone calls from people from all around the globe. So I want to thank you for tuning in, because we've been here for 16 years. And before we start, we want to say thanks to all of our contributors for the last few weeks. We met our goal and surpassed it about 200-300%. Thank you for reaching down and making those donations possible so we can come to you every Tuesday. We've been here for 16 years, Martina and I. I'm only 20 years old, so I don't know how I'm able to do that. But we've been here for all this time bringing you information that you can use. And thank you for tuning in to Crow. I want to say a big shout out to those folk who made a donation and contribution to the station through our last fund drive, and with particular emphasis on to Mr. Gene Kim. Thank you, who made a tremendous contribution to Crossroads. Sir, we appreciate you and stay in touch, and we need all the help we can get. And want to say thanks to the Walter Pierce family, his sisters and brother we met. Walter Pierce was in an exhibit that we had at the Smithsonian Museum, the Anacostia branch, and they did an exhibit about community activists, and Walter Pierce was highlighted in this exhibit. Walter's no longer with us, but he did a tremendous amount of work for our youth with the Ontario Lakers up in the Adams Morgan area. So to Walter Pierce, sister and brother, thank you for tuning in and being a supporter of Crossroads. Now we're going to start with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey, D.C. routinely fails to spend millions of federal grant dollars for ending homelessness. While the district can shift unused local funds to other homeless service programs or move them to the next year, unspent federal dollars must be returned per HUD rules. In the fiscal year 2017, D.C. returned $2 million of a $22 million grant. And in 2018, $2.6 million of a $27 million grant. While HUD does not yet have numbers for more recent years, estimates the city returned between $2.5 million to $4 million annually in the fiscal year 2019, 2020, and 21. With the homelessness problem being what it is, D.C. returned over $4 million annually back to HUD to house homeless people. Billions in taxpayer dollars now go to religious schools via vouchers. The rapid expansion of state voucher programs follows court decisions that have eroded the separation between church and state. Billions in taxpayer dollars are being used to pay tuitions at religious schools throughout the country. As state voucher programs expand dramatically, and the line separating public education and religion fades. School vouchers can be used at almost any private school, but the vast majority of the money is being directed to religious schools, according to a Washington Post examination of the nation's largest voucher programs. Appeals court blocks Fearless Fund from awarding grants to Black women. A panel of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled last week that an Atlanta-based venture capital firm should be temporarily blocked from issuing grants reserved for Black businesses, saying that doing so would likely discriminate against business owners and other races. This is the first court decision in 150-year history of the post-Civil War civil rights law that has halted private charitable support for any racial or ethnic group. The dissenting judge, the district court, and other courts have these types of claims. They said these types of claims should not prevail. Should money decide who's kept in jail? More locations are saying no. Los Angeles and Illinois are the latest jurisdictions to change their cash bail system. Starting last week, the arrest process for most criminal defendants in L.A. would look very different. An administrative change by the county court means that people accused of most misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies who would have been taken to jail and charged cash bail to get out will instead generally be released with an order to appear in court at a later date. And that's been what we call the grapevine information that you can use. Thank you for tuning in. We're waiting on our guests to come in. Now, first, Al, this is the two-hour special we do once a month. Every first Tuesday, we come to you live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl, and that's where we are right now. And our first topic is the incarcerated stress syndrome. And we have a doctor coming in, Dr. Rhonda Hamilton. We're talking about the incarcerated stress syndrome. One of the things that really got me interested in this, we wrote a program a few years ago called PISS, P-I-S-S, Post-Incarcerated Stress Syndrome. Because with so many men and women coming out after 30, 40, 50 years, decades in prison, most of whom, or quite a few, have returned to prison. They can't put up with it. They can't deal with the stress, the changes, the technological advances, the high society has changed. And these men and women have returned voluntarily to prison. We call it prison side. Along with prison side, we'll be discussing post-incarcerated stress syndrome. As everybody knows, when you go into the service, men and women come out with what they call PTSD. PTSD is a disorder caused by the involvement in or exposure to a traumatic event in a normal situation. Most soldiers in the military, or armed services rather, suffer from PTSD. And if they suffer and they've been there 18 months or 2 years or 3 years, what do you think the men and women incarcerated suffer? And they've been in 30, 40, 50 years and more. And PTSD is a disorder caused by the involvement in or exposure to a traumatic event, getting a life sentence, being sent to prison for 5, 10, 20 years, and everything is taken from you. Cause PTSD. We call it PISS, post-incarcerated stress syndrome, how these men are going through holy hell trying to get back and get their life back. Most times, getting a life back that they never knew in the first place. So our guest is on her way. We're waiting. So in the meantime, we're just holding down the fort until Dr. Rhonda Hamilton come in. She's the director of M1 Mothers Keeper Mental Health Affairs and Advocates. And we'll be talking about the problems. And believe me, folks, there are a lot of problems associated with someone coming out of an institution after being confined for years. They lose a lot of things in terms of trying to adjust. If any of you seen this movie, Shawshank Redemption, that's my favorite film. And in there, you see Morgan Freeman when he was coming out and the changes he was going through as a bagging up the food in his grocery store. He couldn't make it. He just sat in his room and said he didn't have a purpose or life out here. Inside of an institution, he had a role, a purpose, and a function. He knew everybody. He felt comfortable. He adjusted. Now he's been thrown out into society. Where you've been removed for 50 years. He did 40 years and it released him. And it is almost impossible to adjust without some mental, social, psychological, economic, every kind of help that you can get for these men and women coming out. And it's ironic that we're sitting here and we're looking at President Trump was found guilty of 34 felonies. He had a couple more cases, accused of rape. And he is running for president of the United States. If you or I got arrested and had one charge, he got 34, and he's running for president of the United States. Folk, I don't know what's going on in this country. Things are not what they should be or what was, but this is a terrible, terrible situation that we're looking at a convicted felon who might be reelected as president of the United States. And if we don't do something, and today is D.C. primary day, you can vote in D.C., and for all of you returning citizens who got a criminal record, Marion Barry earned his late city councilman earned Dixon back in 1979. We got the law passed. It's called DC Public Law 179. And it gives returning citizens the right to vote in all elections in Washington, D.C. And the good part about it is if you haven't registered to vote, you can register and vote at the same time. There are more than 75 polling sites all over Washington, D.C. So if you're returning citizens, don't worry about how much time you did. Don't worry about what your charge was or how many people got hurt in this defense and how many times you've been denied for parole and how many times you've been rearrested. That is not the issue. If you got a criminal record, you can vote in any in election today's primary. Please, please, please go vote. If you don't vote, the people that we don't want in there is going to get in anyway. So if we can lessen the possibility of these persons trying to get back into office, it's up to us to vote. And we have a large, large, over 60,000 to 70,000 returning citizens. And when you factor in their wives, their mothers, their kids, their sons, and their daughter, we're looking at over 100,000 folk. So if you want to do something about what's going on in the city council, all these laws that's coming down targeting our youth, if you feel that ain't right, you want to do something about it, find a candidate that you can support. But please don't stand on the corner and cry, give me that jiggy boogie, but I don't like this, I don't like that. That ain't going to get it. You need to go down and vote. If you don't vote, you not voting is going to help somebody else who you don't want in because they're going to have more votes. So please, this is D.C. primary day, and we're asking everyone, especially returning citizens, get your grandmama up, get your puppy up. I don't care who it is. Go down and vote, people, because what's coming down with the city council and these laws has been coming down, talking at our youth for these safe zones and talking about locking them up for truancy. D.C. has a truancy rate of 40%. 40%, that means 4 out of 10 kids are not going to school. And they're talking about arresting them or punishing them or detaining them. Folks, a lot of these kids are afraid to come out of the house because there's bullies on the front, there's bullies on the corner, there's gangs, and you can't go in certain neighborhoods. Some kids can't go to school because they can't cross certain streets or boundaries. If they do, they will get hurt or assaulted. There's nothing that the city council and the mayor has been proposing and implementing. Deal with prevention and making sure these kids feel safe. They live in a house where there's no food, no mother, father, and no electricity, nothing. And you want to lock these kids up and detain them for not going to school. And they're not going to school because they're afraid. They're scared. And the homeless rate for youth in D.C. is over 60. The unemployment rate for youth in Washington, D.C., is over 60%. We got kids that ain't got no money, no income. The father ain't got none. The mother ain't. The father's in jail. The mother's in the street. And the kids that are not going to school, they're just trying to find a place to live and sleep. So Ms. Bowser and the city councilman, why don't y'all look a little deeper? This is like saying that, the attorney general, Brian Schwab, came out last week with a memorandum with some suggested a new law stating that we need to get these kids. There's no rehabilitation going up in YSC, Youth Services Administration, where these kids are detained, waiting to go to trial for an offense they committed. And we're saying that these kids, and he's saying that the recidivism rate for them kids getting locked up is off the charts. Folks, how do you expect some of the kids? If you're drowning and you take this person out of a drowning pool of water and you give them mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and you save their life and you stand them up and throw them right back in the water, then you say, y'all got a high drowning rate. You don't release the kids back to the same neighborhood, to the same environment, to the same negative behavior that they are experiencing or living in and expect them to change. We need to do more for our kids. And that's been it. I've been on my soapbox this morning, waiting on our guest. She hasn't got here yet. Nikichi Taif, our co-host, she'll be joining us shortly. So joining me this morning is just my wife, my beautiful wife, Mertine Moore Brown. I don't know why this woman married me, but I'm sure glad that she did, because I wouldn't know what I'd be doing if I wasn't with her. And I tell her about, this is my wife. Ain't not a wife. This is my wife. We are together, wife and me. So I want to thank you.
I would like to say something. Not only is it important that we vote, we're doing a disservice, a disrespect to our ancestors who were killed. I mean, they made up laws. You could only vote if there was a grandfather clause. Come on, we didn't have grandpas who voted when the vote got passed that we could vote. So please use your vote and understand, if you're not using your vote, you're voting for disaster. We saw what happened the last 4 years. The man has been clear what he's going to do. He's a bully. He's a bully. He has no morals, no character. That's who you want running this country again? We know what's going to happen. The same thing. It was stolen. It was rigged. We don't need that again. So please vote. Please.
Incarceration can cause lasting damage to mental health. Folks don't seem to realize when someone is removed from society and they're placed into an institution, the social and psychological problems that they encounter or experience while they're inside are lasting, everlasting, and there's no treatment, there's no support for them. And you see people every day now walking through the streets, eating out of trash cans, sleeping on the streets and the sidewalk. A lot of these folk are returning citizens. The stats say that 7 out of every 10 black male in America has been arrested, stopped by the police, or incarcerated at least once. So we got 70% of our black male population, and I don't have the percentage for how many females, but the number has been growing. That we got a high unemployment rate. When they say that the average white person makes $125,000 to live in Washington, D.C. The average black family makes $45,000 to $50,000. And the bills are going up, and we're saying, what can be done to address this problem? So our show this morning is with Dr. Rhonda Hamilton. Thank you for coming in, Doc. We miss you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Well, come on over. We've been holding down the fort until you can get in.
Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Our guest has just arrived. She had a little difficulty getting here, but I want to introduce her now. Dr. Hamilton is a native of Washington, D.C., Ward 8, is educated in district public schools as a Dean List Business Management major doing her studies at the University of D.C. The MI Mothers Keeper Organization, under the direct guidance of Dr. Hamilton, spearheads mental health programming and outreach work across the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. In 2022, Dr. Hamilton challenged the current mayor of Washington, D.C. in a general mayoral election as a write-in candidate. Although unsuccessful, she gained the admiration and support of many Washingtonians who were like Dr. Hamilton and recognized the need for change with regard to the existing elected leadership. Dr. Hamilton continues to spearhead mental health programming, case management, and outreach work in the District of Columbia. And I want to say thank you for joining us this morning, because this is a topic. You want to come a little closer? I ain't gonna bite you.
I don't bite women.
I don't bite women.
Uh-oh. You got to work on that.
Good morning, Dr. Yeah, I forgot your name.
That's okay. You know, good morning.
Getting old and stuff.
Oh, don't talk about it.
I walk in the room and tell my wife, I said, where's my phone? Where's my phone? She said, I said, I need to call my phone. And I'm looking, she said, she started laughing. What you laughing about? The phone is in my hand.
No, in your hand.
In my hand. I'm looking all. Some of y'all know this stuff getting old is too much.
I tell you, it's a blessing if you look at it from someone else's.
There you go. So, Dr. Hamilton, what is your organization, Mothers Keeper Mental Health Advocate? What is that about?
Oh, boy. Am I Mothers Keeper Mental Health Advocates? I can tell you, Roche, that it is a blessing to be able to still be here and to be asked that question pre-pandemic. And my Mother's Keeper, our organization, went on the ground here in Washington, D.C., because we wanted to help heal the divide. We saw so many families suffering and struggling with matters of mental health, but the stigma is so thick. And so I realized coming from a family and working in the field that there were conversations we weren't having on the ground, and too many people were struggling in silence. You know, we had children showing up to our programs and hungry when we walked them home to find out about the distress that was going on. We saw holes in the wall. We saw empty refrigerators. We saw dignity being lost. And the reality of struggling with something as serious as mental health and not having someone to help you convey, you know, what you're going through for so many, it's life or death, really. And I think that we go about every day without realizing or taking for granted. And it's something that doesn't really matter until it affects you.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so concerned that we weren't doing enough in the preventative space.
Right.
We can't talk preventative because we're too busy chasing the problem. And so as mental health advocates, we realized that, you know, as those of us that come up in D.C. and most importantly, these marginalized communities that we recognize all too well, we deal with a lot. We struggle with a lot. But oftentimes we don't want to talk about it. You know, we were raised in households with, you know, keeping inside and that was doing more harm than good. And what we realize is that at the core of everything we're fighting as a city, whether it's the failed public safeties, the drug abuse addiction or substance use addiction, I should say, the housing circumstances, the reality is that if we can't stabilize folks in their mental health and help them to become better educated about how to deal with it, then we're going to continue to fail as a society. And I know that today you want to talk a bit about the recidivism rates and how the mental health impacts that population. And I think to understand the devastation of mental health in that population is to understand the devastation of mental health in our communities, period. Because we are a society that is dealing with it from a standpoint, not me, but you. And that's what that stigma is about. No one wants to wear the label. And it becomes dangerous when we approach it that way, because there are young men and women who are coming out of prison who most likely haven't gotten the help that they need. The statistical data speaks to that. They say that over 70% of our prison population is either dealing with a mental health matter or a substance use problem. So you look at that, and then you look at the streets of Washington, D.C. with 98% fentanyl and the opioid crisis. And then on top of that, we're failing our citizens of mental health. So it's just a formula for disaster.
Well, you know, one of the things that caught my eye was that when the military service people return from the service, they get what's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And it's PTSD is a disorder caused by the involvement in or exposure to a traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
Prison is a traumatic event.
Yes, it is.
Being sentenced is a traumatic, being taken away from your mother and your father and your kids, everything. Your whole life is turned upside down. And 15, 20 years ago when I was in, or 30 years ago when I was in, mm-hmm. We came up with a program called PISS, P-I-S-S. Post-incarcerated stress syndrome is just similar to PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been trying to push that to say that men and women coming out of institutions have a tremendous, besides the basic stuff, home, employment, clothes, food, and et cetera, mentally and psychologically, they are out of touch and out of tune with society and with their life. One of the biggest problems I found when I was incarcerated, and they send you from Lawton to Oklahoma to Texas and California, when you look at TV, there's no black news on television.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington, You turn on the television and you see black reporters, you see black hosts, black stories. Mm-hmm. When you go to Oklahoma and Tennessee, you see Lawrence Welk or the Grand Ole Opry. You know what I mean? And you don't know what's going on back in your home city.
Well, yeah, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's just talk about us for a minute, right? I mean, those of us that grew up in the good times era and, you know, Archie Bunker, if you will. The reality is that America is a very amazing place for a lot of different reasons. We can't escape our history, right? And we're such an emotional people. And, you know, even in our mental health ailments and healing, we need to see culturally relevant folks sitting on the other side. I mean, let's face it, we have problems trusting. So when we are existing in environments where we don't see us, you know, we're not able to speak to us, and then us are not in the room to help us relate to these health matters that we have. I will say to you that I can't imagine, you say it's PISS. What is that again? Tell me what it is again.
PISS. Post-incarcerated stress syndrome.
I can't imagine why that's not an official thing, because it certainly has great relevance. I would tell you that the struggles we have with helping our prison population folks to stabilize and come back and integrate into society is a big part of what we're dealing with in our, again, failures in public safety, our inability to help folks stabilize in their housing. You mentioned the military population and liking it, the PTSD to the PISS, which I think is very relevant. My father, a beautiful man and a soldier, we lost him long before PTSD was diagnosed. We lost him to his heroin addiction. He went away a young man and came back and had problems reintegrating. Dave, he's actually Ronald David Williams, but Dave is who they knew him affectionately as. And the reality of recognizing why this is important, you know, our families have been broken for quite some time. And when you are challenged to help our soldiers and our men and women who've been incarcerated to come back and integrate into society, then you have a problem with healing the family. And I don't think that we take that into consideration when we look at the failing rates in our city. For example, we were on the ground in Cedar Heights over in Southeast DC pre-pandemic. And many young men who, you know, they deal on the corner, you know, our corner boys, right? And the reality of that not being acceptable, and we get that. But we had property managers that had these invisible fences where these young men were barred from the property. And so they would stand right at the front of the property, but not be able to be on the property. Now, yeah. The problem with that is you're separating our men, our young men, from their families. And even prison has rehabilitation. But when you look into society in these communities, some of the solutions for dealing with brothers who had lost their way or who had issues were to separate them from their families visibly in daylight and to not realize the trauma. Now, you talk about PTSD and PISS. Well, there's something called ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. And so if you are a product of ACEs and you are incarcerated, then you've just basically been living your life through this trauma and unresolved health issues. It just kind of goes from one thing to the next. So to be in a system, not be aware of who you are, or to be struggling with that, to be a product of a childhood trauma that has now morphed into an adult level trauma, of course you are looking for someone to identify with. But what happens when that doesn't happen and you come out into society and you're still trying to find yourself? See, we talk about mental health so much, and it's such a red flag. But what about mental wellness?
Yeah.
Why do we not have opportunities to invest into preventative understandings? We're chasing it. We're waiting for the signs to show themselves. We're housing our citizens in environments where they don't get to integrate with people that look like them when it comes to health matters of health. You talk about a television show. I mean, what happens when you have to go inside of those four walls and bare your soul? Because it's a matter of life or death. And the person on the other side is using a book. There are things that we go through it as a race, as a people, yes, that's not in the book.
Yes.
They're still writing the book on us. Yes. They're still figuring out and studying us. You know,
one of the questions I had when I was locked up, on a few occasions was that when you locked up in your early 20s and your libido is growing, your hormones are raging.
Absolutely.
When you take somebody and deny them, your sex drive is a natural emotion. When you you're being forced to ignore your natural emotion and you got to suppress them. So even though you may want to express yourself physically with your loved one, but you can't. So when you go 10, 20, 30, 40 years without touching a female, without having any sex with anybody, that does something to your psyche.
Of course.
And I had a big, big problem with that coming out, because one of the things we found out is that everybody in the Black community, everybody is suffering from HIV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to repeat.
Come on with it. HIV.
Everybody in the Black community is suffering from HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And what that stands for is hood infected virus.
Absolutely.
And we got a virus in our community of poverty, homelessness, hopelessness, all the lessers and the nuns we lead in that particular category. So what, from your point of view, Doc, is when somebody's being denied the right to express themselves emotionally or you can't satisfy your sexual desire, what kind of impact does that have on somebody's psychic and mental stability while they're incarcerated?
You know what's interesting that you make that point, and we don't hear it made often enough, and I'm glad you did. The reality of families that deal with or struggle with, I should say, individuals that struggle with mental health challenges, there's a high level of sexual activity and interest the word that comes to mind is mayhem, because that's really what happens when you have someone dealing with mental health challenges, but also heavily influenced in their sexual behaviors. That's a thing, you know, especially amongst our teens. So you can imagine being an adult and being suppressed. But, you know, when we talk about matters of suppression when it comes to our sexual interest, the reality for mental health as a whole annually, our LGBTQ population is one of the highest populations that seek mental health or are in need of mental health annually.
Yeah.
Right? That's not by mistake.
Right.
See, the statistical data is here. There is a cause and effect for every understanding. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. But yeah, I love that you bring that up, because that's a thing.
Well, I'm going to bring that up again and again and again, because I've been in it a long time. And this is WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world. And again, we want to thank all our listeners who call in and write in Texas from around the globe. And I just want to mention that there's a Stop the Killing Summit. Make our communities a decent and safe place to live. Malcolm X Park, 16th and Euclid Street in Northwest, June 15th. That's June 15th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Crisis Management Unit presents Stop the Killing Summit. So please, people, everybody, when we read something or share it with you, we'd like for everybody to join and participate, because what we're talking about doing is saving some lives, stopping some killings, redirecting some folks, and getting our families reconnecting and help those folk who are in need of it. And that's what we're about here on this show. So Stop the Killing Summit, it will be June 15th, 2024 at Malcolm X Park, 16th and Euclid Street. We used to call it Meridian Hill Park. But please, people, put that on your agenda. And joining us is none other than our dynamic co-host, Ms. Nkechi Taifa. Good morning, Nkechi.
Good morning, Roach. Good morning, guests. I'm sorry that I'm late this morning, but I didn't want to miss this topic.
You ain't never late. When you're here, you're here.
It's all good. Hammer team.
How are you, Nkechi?
Doing great. Yeah. So you used to call this PISS, right?
Yes,
PISS.
And we read something, Nkechi. Somebody just recognizes that the stress factor of being incarcerated. Somebody in one of these articles, this came out in 2 years ago. We came out with this 15 years ago, and Dr. Hamilton said, she haven't heard about it and it hasn't been recognized in the academic community. We haven't spoke to the academic community. We only speak about this on the show because we've been working on it with boots on the ground. But this topic, PISS, post-incarcerated stress syndrome, is similar to that PTSD, but nobody's been talking about it. And this is a big problem.
when it, like when he released the youngsters, when he released anybody, a female, when I had a problem when I came out. And I'm going to tell you something that I don't. When you was in prison, they had Hustler magazines and Playboy. They let you get them for a while. Then all of a sudden, they outlawed them. You couldn't get them no more. So we used to use them books and look at them because you couldn't be with a woman. So you're going in your masturbating one of them books. And the problem was, when you see a lady with a bikini on, you think that that's where the good is at, where the top of the bikini is. So for years, I'm looking at the top of the bikini is where the good is at. So when I get out and put my hand down there.
Okay, now.
And it's below the line.
Okay.
I'm scared because I don't know what's going on. You know, the body didn't change. You reckon you forget different parts of the body and where they're located. Uh-huh. And it causes all kinds of problems. And you look at the lady, she look at you like, what's wrong with you? I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't figure this stuff out. So you go through a lot of mental, psychological gymnastics. Uh-huh. And there's nobody you can turn to help you. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Same way with your kids. I have three sons and I'm estranged from all three. Mm-hmm. And one of them said, where was I for the first 14 years of his life? Mm-hmm. And we're trying to deal with it. And I still can't get over that. I got three sons. Father's Day is coming up. And I know I won't spend Father's Day with my three sons. Mm-hmm. And it hurts. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I haven't been able to overcome those psychological and mental challenges and barriers that affected me inside. And I'm still dealing with it. And I've been out over 30 years and I'm still dealing with adjusting relationships and that kind of stuff. So this problem of his post-incarcerated stress syndrome, they talk about the servicemen and PTSD. Folks, our problem is 10 times as worse because the soldiers don't be placed in isolation. They don't get brutalized. They may get wounded or shot or whatever. But when you go year after year after year for the next 20, 30, 40 years, it builds up.
It does. And let's talk about that. And I appreciate you being vulnerable. In our community, a big part of it is just willing to be vulnerable and open up because we don't trust the walls go up and we don't get to talk about these important matters. Now, it's sad to understand that an event in your life would keep you from being able to reconnect with your sons, especially since you are, you know, the paternal head. Mm-hmm. And so if that connection doesn't happen, not so much what it does for you, but what does it do for them? Because now they go on to carry your legacy and then they are impacted by your inability to be able to maintain a relationship with them. And I think all too often when we're talking about these matters in our family structures, we look at mental health as being one dimensional, but the reality are just a direct result of trauma. And I think that what I hear you speaking to more so of the trauma of being incarcerated and not being able to address these issues about yourself that you are familiar with, recognizing, but obviously not finding a successful therapeutic relationship. Because we like to believe that in talking about it, working through it, that we have opportunities to heal. PTSD, before it was a thing, represented or manifested in drug or substance use, sexual, hypersexuality, gambling, you know, any type of addiction. You know, a lot of times we deflect to when we're not dealing with the surface level or the root of the problem that at hand. So when I hear you say that you've been incarcerated for so many years and as a result of it prohibits your ability to rebuild your relationship with your sons.
Yes.
Then I would say that I would want to know what levels of therapy or vulnerability you've allowed yourself to go to be able to get to the root cause of what keeps you from being able to help your sons heal. Because when you have an ability to know the true impact of you not being able to have a relationship with them, what that looks like, that means that your generations, your legacy will not have an opportunity to heal from this incarceration. Yeah. And so when you ask about the level of impact, your incarceration is going to have an impact on your great, 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 great grandchildren, because you still haven't healed.
Yeah.
And so that in and of itself is the importance of why we as a community and as a culture have to approach mental health better. So you asked me about our agency and who we are. We came out to create or raise the consciousness of the conversation around mental health, because as a society, we understand it in one dimension. We understand that because we recognize a thing and now we know it's a thing, that makes it okay. Well, your work has just begun, because you recognize why you haven't been able to, you still haven't done it. You have a responsibility, as long as you're here, in my opinion, professionally, to keep working at those relationships, not so much because it's about you and your sons, but it's about you and your unborn grandchildren that have yet to show up. And a lot of times as a culture, we are not holding ourselves accountable for that, because we do come from and we do deal with a lot of trauma.
Let me ask you this. We're talking, we're breaking some new ground. We're talking about things that you normally don't hear on the air. What happens, or is there any way, because I know a lot of men coming out and women, and they can't connect. I got a woman, she's a friend of ours. She did 18 years in prison, and she had 2-3 kids when she came out, and she's going through the same thing of trying to reconnect with her son, who's in his 20s now, and he don't listen to mom, don't respect mom, and you got a 20-year gap. I had like a 14-year gap, and there's nothing, no program that I know of that would help bridge that gap or make the relationship closer or work on that relationship between the parent. Because most men who come out, if they don't have any contact with their kids while they was in, when they come out after 20, 30 years, there's virtually no relationship there. And they're fighting, it's toxic, it's too much tension in the relationship. And the kid is bitter and angry. And the father don't know what to do because he's trying to get his life together. He don't have no money, don't have a job, no place to stay. And he's coming into the house with 4 or 5 kids. And he's bringing another mouth in, but he's not contributing. And the kid look at father again. It's further look down on him. You can't even pay the bills. You can't bring no food into this house. So the father's been further emasculated, pushed to the side. And with society's lack of support mechanism, mental health counseling, jobs, employment, the father's isolated. So that put a further strain on a relationship between the parent who'd been locked up and these kids who missed their parent for 15, 20 years. And this lady who did 18 years, she came out, went to college, got a degree, married a guy, her husband, he did 28 years, she did 18. And they still having problems trying to relate or connect or establish a relationship with their kids. You saying therapy, is therapy what you suggest in terms of those men and women who can't build that bridge with their kids who they're reconnected with after 20, 30 years?
I think therapy is a good first step. It's a good step. It's not something that helps for everybody. It's not a overall fix. But what it does is it opens you up to behaviors that you might not be in tune with, meaning that if you're going to heal a thing, you got to recognize a thing and you got to work on a thing. And a lot of times in our community, we have preset understandings of what therapy represents. It represents weakness for a lot of folks that come from where we come from. You know, we weren't taught that it's okay to talk to someone. A lot of times, as I said, we were taught to be quiet about the things we deal with. But I want to touch on something that you mentioned. The reality is the recognition that there's such a thing as a generational divide, right? In our suicide workshops with our young people, you know, we often hear the frustration, the stress, they don't understand me. And we're trying to figure out, because suicide is the second leading cause of death amongst a population from 10 years old up to 24 years old, we realize that we're losing the fight when it comes to suicide and our ability to understand the driving forces that impact it. And so one of the things that I want you to know is that in talking to our youth, one of the things that they're constantly reminding us is that there is a generational divide. The way you were taught to do things, the way you understand things is going to be different from that generation that you've been disconnected from. And a lot of times, as we say on boots on the ground in the community, and we see these headlines and yellow tape goes up and they say, oh, these young people in DC, they're out of control. They're a menace. You know, we use all kinds of words. And what I say to them, when we see the emotion, if you show me a sign of emotion, I'm going to show you a heart that we can heal. not because I know what's going on with them yet, but because we all suffer from the same reality. And that is that if you're not willing to be vulnerable enough to recognize that beyond what your pain is, beyond what your pain is, there is a purpose and there is an accountability. When we don't hold ourselves accountable, then relationships fail. And the ultimate failure is suicide, because you don't get a do-over. And so oftentimes I ask the parents of our older generations, do you want to be right or do you want to bury your child? Because we as a creature, we are, you know, we hold on to it, right? We deflect, we protect, we go within. And generationally, the danger is we were raised, do as I say, not as I do. That is not realistic for our children who were raised in a different understanding with the TV in front of them, with the computer in front of them. They have different, they're more emotional than we were.
Yeah.
And when you can't tap into that emotion, you can't start the healing. And unfortunately, a lot of our older generation and our generations coming out of jail have a survival instinct that is hard to penetrate. See, you're a survivor no matter what. Yeah. You're going to survive. And your approach and your tactics for doing so don't necessarily resonate with your offspring. And now you got to decide how much longer are you going to live before you realize that there's something that next generation needs from you, even if you don't get it. That's your legacy. Everything you hope to transfer and translate and put out there in the universe, you won't live long enough to do.
Yeah. You know, this is interesting. Okay, we'll take our first caller. Come on, caller. Question or comment, please.
I have a comment. Hello?
Hello, you're on air.
Okay. Good morning, Roach, Martine, Nkechi, and Dr. Rhonda. I've been trying to get Dr. Rhonda to be on Joni's show. Roach, you're blessed to have her. You don't know the depth of the creativity of the woman there. I know her personally. She's a great organizer, and she's helped me personally, and she helps not just old folks or people with mental issues. She's a community activist and leader.
What's your name,
Dr.
sir?
Dr. Hamilton. I want to say something to her. Dr. Hamilton, this is Jehudi. How you doing?
Hi, Jehudi.
I thought you sound familiar.
Look, hello, Jehudi Tassetti.
Hello, Martine. I know the whole family there. I know the whole family that's up there in PFW. Boy, what a powerful group. Boy.
Thank you. We appreciate you, man. We appreciate
you. Okay, I'm going to get off and let somebody else get on.
Okay, thank you. You got a question or comment?
Peace.
Hello?
Please.
I can't hear you. Okay. Oh, he gone.
That's beautiful.
So, Dr. Rhonda, with teenagers, with young people, how do you, if I need to come to you, I'm lost. I don't know what to do. What will happen when I come to your agency?
I like that question. We have intake process that happens. So we realize that because mental health is not so attractive in the sense of, hey, I got to go over there because I need those services. We realize we have to package it, right? We have to create portals, whether it's through our women's support group, through our reading programs, our golf programs, our outreach in the community. Again, we came out to heighten or raise the awareness or consciousness around the discussion of mental health. And if it's a deterrent, we don't get enough folks, right? But if we get folks that come in and before they realize that they're enjoying themselves, they understand the conversation, they want to come back, oh, this isn't so bad, or I do identify with, now all of a sudden we have the opportunity for healing, but not until we can get the walls to come down. And so the way that we do it is we invite you in through our community outreach, whether it's, again, our support groups, our golf programs, our reading programs. We wanted to normalize the conversation around mental health. And we couldn't do that because in our society, we tend to isolate or separate as soon as we talk about mental health.
And the truth of the matter is, my beautiful mother walked this earth with visible voices and hallucinations. She couldn't hide that. But we still had to find a way for her to be able to integrate into society and live out the best quality of her life. Well, we can't do that when we have folks that don't understand and they're violent, they react, or people that don't realize that it's just as healthy to recognize that you need help than it is to be hiding and fearful and to shy away from it. So in our communities, what it looks like coming into our program is it looks like you're affiliating with folks that love and care for you and don't have any judgment, folks that identify with you, folks that are going to be relatable to you, but folks that are going to hold you accountable. See, our behaviors dictate that there's something wrong. The very understanding of why we understand mental health to be of concern is because our behaviors begin to show itself. And so in order to help folks with their behaviors, we got to understand where they are, why it is they tick that way, where there's some trauma there. Is there something that's ongoing presently that contributes to it? Is it about isolation and being lonely? See, everybody assumes that because you say mental health, that you get it. Your mental health is my mental health. No, just as your walk with God is your personal relationship, yeah, your mental health is your personal relationship. And it is about who you are and what you've been through. And just identifying that and recognizing that doesn't make it okay. You're not done. Yeah. You still have a responsibility to yourself and to those that you have a legacy with. So, my dear Mr.
How do we reach you?
But if you realize that you want to do this work, right, yes, and actually really be a part of it, MI Mother's Keeper website is mimotherskeeper.com, mimotherskeeper.com. And a quick rundown memory lane, why does it exist? Well, I realized I had to create a nonprofit because now I'm the daughter of schizophrenia coming out of Ward 8, Southeast, and you will not talk to my mother that way. So I couldn't be a grown woman dragging people because I can, it's in me, right? I had to create an opportunity to be a part of the solution instead of being a part of the problem. And for too many nights, our family dealt with dysfunction. We didn't understand this mental health thing. We didn't understand that long before these fancy words of schizophrenia and PTSD and all. And that's why I say we have opportunity to do and get it better because we know better. Research exists. But when we have the research and we still don't demonstrate the behaviors, then who do we hold accountable? We are a society that is going to continue to evolve. And if we keep dealing with yesterday's mental health in today's society, we're behind. We're still not talking preventative yet. And as I said, the representation of failure is suicide. Yeah. When we just don't get it right, when the effects of what we've been through and what we're going through are not able to professionally and properly be able to be addressed, we lose them. And so I ask my folks, do you want to be right? Or do you want to keep burying your loved ones?
You know what? We're out of time. It went so fast. But I want to throw something back out that for the next time you come back on. We said something at the top of the show that everybody in the Black community all over the country is suffering from HIV, hood-infected virus. What's your interpretation of that? How do you see that?
I think that's accurate. But I think that what we have to do, because society is not going to stop for us, Roach. Right. We can keep having these revelations about ourselves. The gentrification conversations will continue to show up. Truth of the matter is we don't own the struggle. Right. We don't own the struggle. We are disproportionately affected and impacted by it. But that makes us or should help us to become more accountable and responsible to the generations coming behind us. Okay. It's 2024 and we're still talking about our failures from yesterday. We should never forget. But where is the solution? Okay. And we can't talk solution if we don't deal with our health, our
Thank
mental
you.
Health.
Our time is up.
One more time, the website, no. mimotherskeeper.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank Dr. Rhonda Hamilton for joining us, Mother's Keeper Mental Health Advocate. This is our two-hour special, the first Tuesday every month. We come live from Ben's Chili Bowl. Our next hour will be with the owner, founder, and the godmother of U Street, Miss Virginia Arley. She'll be in a very few minutes. I want to thank Dr. Rhonda Hamilton. And you've been coming to meetings and all this time. I had no idea you was this deep. You was this heavy. And you know, and you never told it to the hat. You got to tell it to the hat, lady. You know what I mean?
Where I come from, you know, to walk lightly. Most people say, oh, there's a mental health lady in the room. People think they know what I'm going to say, and yeah. I have to make sure not to be predictable because I'm fighting for lives. And
thank you, Dr. Hamlin, for joining us. We'll be right back in the next hour for our second hour with the Godmother of New Street, Mrs. Virginia Harley. Stay tuned, and thank you for tuning in and listening to Crossroads. We'll see you in the next hour, and thank you. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. And nobody heard me talking. Seems like I gotta do wrong. Before they notice me. Another job that I just can't get. A nice apartment the landlord just won't rent. I go to bed but my sleep just won't come. My belly's empty and my brain is numb. Nobody saw me walking and nobody heard me talking. Before they notice me, seems like I got to do wrong. Before they notice me.
Do you love WPFW? Now is your chance to get involved by participating in the local station board. Run for a seat on the board by becoming a candidate between June 1st and June 30th. Complete your candidate package located on elections.pacifica.org. Call 707-500-1910 to leave a voicemail for the election supervisor.
Greetings. This is Interim General Manager Miyuki Williams. Thanks to all who donated during the spring membership drive. Thanks also to those who came out to the Tacoma Station Happy Hour and our open house, allowing us to meet those we serve. If you are unable to donate during the drive, you can donate anytime at wpfwfm.org. With your support, WPFW can continue offering engaging and insightful programming, making the world better, one broadcast at a time.
Taking Action offers listeners current information about protecting our schools and communities by interviewing leaders in public housing development and educators. We share strategies to stand up for social justice, providing a voice for the homeless and those fighting against gentrification in our city, in addition to building our power as a community by supporting local businesses and holding government officials accountable for their actions. Taking Action is produced by Empower DC. Listen every Tuesday on 89.3 FM at 1 p.m. Also available on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. On your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct professor Garland Nixon hosts News Views Fridays at 6 p.m. Tune in to hear a refreshing angle on today's state of affairs and other issues other media intentionally overlook. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
This is attorney Nikichi Taifa, and I am thrilled to host a new talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., starting September, as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nikichi Taifa, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., for Human Rights and Justice.
We declare our right on this earth.
to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Hey, this is Matt from Martha's Table in Washington, D.C. We're throwing a fantastic Father's Day celebration, and you and your family are invited on Saturday, June 8th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Martha's Table's Commons location at 2375 Elvins Road, Southeast, D.C. This is a family-friendly event, and there is no cost to attend. You'll get to enjoy tasty food from local food trucks, win prizes, and groove to live music. Martha's Table is all about supporting strong children, strong families, and strong communities, and we want to celebrate.